All right. Welcome, everyone, to the Verifiable Credentials HTTP API call. Thank you very much to Chris Kelly, who is scribing today. I'm going to be just running the agenda today. Chris, you can basically type into, you can just type into the chat window as you're going. I forgot to mention that. There we go. Perfect. And you can just put my first name or people's first name, or their last name, and either one will work.
But before we start, do we have any duplicate first names? Where I would differentiate?
I don't think so.
Okay.
And if we do, don't worry. We'll clean up the transcription afterwards. You don't have to.
Don't worry.
It's true. All right. Welcome everyone to the call today. Just a reminder to everyone that this call is covered by the W3C Credentials Community Group Intellectual Property Rights Agreement. Anything you say on the call, if you're a member, you can't claim any IPR over it. If you are not a member of the CCG, please refrain from making any comments that might be considered intellectual property. So, talking about ways to do things or technical solutions, please avoid, those sorts of, comments. In order to make sure that everyone has a chance, to, speak, what we do is, use the queue. If you would like to go on the queue, type Q+. If you want to take yourself off of the queue, you do Q-, and we try to go in order so that everyone has a chance to speak. On the agenda today, we have Daniel Hardman, who's going to be going over a presentation called HTTP APIs for Credential Exchange. That was sent to the mailing list earlier today. So here's the link to that one. So we're going to start out with that, and then we're going to go into our proposals. So anything we're basically going to go through the proposals that were kind of put forward there. Let me stop and see if there are any modifications or changes to the agenda before we move on. Justin, you're on the queue. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to take a minute or two to talk about how this might relate to the GNAP work that is happening in the IETF. As I've commented on a couple of issues on this proposed work that I see a lot of synergy between the efforts.
Great. So, since it's a couple of minutes, if we could time box it to like 5, Justin, you could go first. Would that work for you?
Yeah, no problem.
Okay. Let's go ahead and start off with you and then Daniel, after you. Go ahead, Justin.
Okay. So without getting into all of the details, GNAP is a draft protocol in the IETF, that's basically looking to take a lot of the things that OAuth and OpenID Connect do and, push them into new spaces. It's not a profile or extension of OAuth or OpenID Connect itself. It's not intended to be backwards compatible. And that is allowing us to do a lot of different things in the design. An important thing that's relevant to this group is that whereas in OAuth, the assumption is that the user is always there in a web browser, in GNAP, we've explicitly defined the authorization server as being able to collect authorization and consent and attributes and all of these other things in a variety of fashions in a way that's extensible. When I first heard about this work, the thing I immediately thought of is that this seems perfectly made for exactly this kind of thing. So you have a client application that's trying to get access to an API, an authorization server that wants to grant access to it. And the client app can basically say, oh, hey, I could present some VCs to you, using the following, how do I do that? And the AS comes back, says, tell whoever has them to dump them at this API endpoint to do the presentation or the fetching, or, you know, it could be defined in multiple directions and whatnot. I think that there's a lot of details that would have to be ironed out, but the mapping here seems to be a really, really nice fit.
Awesome. Great, Justin. Thanks for that. Noting the scribe. So Chris, how are you doing? The reason I ask is because we're trying to do a transcription of what, Justin said. I haven't seen anything come across yet.
Yeah. can I get Justin to repeat that?
I apologize. I speak quickly and I was trying to stay within the time box. GNAP is new work in the ITF. And we're trying to do things, sort of move beyond, OAuth 2 and OpenID Connect. And, to do so in a way that enables extensions in new dimensions, particularly, as relevant to this group, around what's possible for interaction. So getting the user involved in the process. And instead of assuming that they are in a browser, which is what OAuth does, we can now say they could present a verifiable credential, and the BCHTTP API is one way that that could be defined. And GNAP and this would seem to me on the surface to really fit well together. There seems to be a really sort of clear connection point for this to be as an interaction method in GNAP. And I posted a link to the GNAP spec in the chat as well.
Perfect. Thanks, Justin.
Great. Thanks. Thanks, Justin. Thanks, Chris. And yeah, so Justin, how would you like to kind of set up that? I mean, you know, I think there are people in both communities that are showing up to this call. Are you going to be attending more of these meetings, or should we have like someone liaise with you every now and then? Are the minutes enough to kind of keep the two things in sync? How would you like to coordinate?
So I can try to attend these meetings where possible. My schedule is already significantly booked that I, quite frankly, I don't know how often that will actually be for me to be able to make this. I would encourage people in this community to attend the, GNAP meetings and GNAP mailing list, if possible. We have an interim working meeting next week, for example. And there's no membership requirements to ITF, for anybody who is looking to join, that work more directly. Specifically, what I would kind of like from some people in this group, is, if you could look at the newest version of the GNAP spec, which we just published literally yesterday afternoon, we rewrote the relevant section, which is section 4 of the specification, where this kind of thing would fit in. And what I'm trying to figure out right now is if what we have in that core spec leaves enough room for this to be able to fit in as an extension, and if not, what needs to change? How does it fit? Those are the kinds of questions that I have. You know, I think it makes sense looking at it on the surface, but that's just one opinion. I would love more.
Got it. Great. Thanks, Justin. All right. Let's go ahead and move on to the next topic. I'm sure we're going to keep an eye on that, Justin. Given, you know, you've got a number of positive comments in the chat, so I'm sure we're going to track how GNAP's doing and try to figure out how to align it with this API. Next up is Daniel Hardman with a presentation, HTTP APIs for Credential Exchange. Over to you. Daniel, if you want to share your screen and start talking through the slides.
Okay. Thank you. I think you're going to find that some of the things I have to say will dovetail really nicely with what Justin just talked about with respect to GNAP. First of all, a little background. The topic that I'm going to try to cover briefly was first raised in an email thread in the CCG in December of 2019, right before we started on the VC HTTP API. And it was raised again in issue 50 of the VC HTTP API repo. And that issue is still open. So there are some background readings that you could do if you wanted to know the history of this concern that I want to talk about. And then more recently in the work on use cases that has been curated by Joe and the other co-editor's name just popped out of my head. Anyway, that's going on under our sponsorship. We had a conversation about the reasons behind certain things related to DIDCOM, and this issue again comes up, and I wrote a Medium article about it. So for what it's worth, if you want to do more reading. What I want to do is I want to talk to you about four use cases. These are not exhaustive. Is not an exhaustive list, but four use cases where I feel like these illustrate an assertion that I'm going to make. And the assertion that I'm going to make is that framing the problem of credential exchange as an HTTP problem is problematic. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't have an HTTP API, but it means that we should frame the problem of standardizing the interaction more broadly than just HTTP and just web services. So let me talk through these four use cases briefly. The first one happened at a company I used to work for that shall remain nameless. And the situation was that they were approached by a Korean conglomerate, a very large company that had hundreds of thousands of employees who wanted to log their employees in to the secure areas of their facilities across the Korean peninsula using verifiable credentials. So they wanted to have, employees show up with an employee credential and be verified as a legitimate employee and unlock a turnstile. And you'll see at the bottom of the slide, there's an A and a B. A represents our original thinking, and B, it represents where we ended up in terms of an architecture. Where we started out was, okay, the mobile device walks up to the turnstile displays like a QR code or something on it, and the mobile device engages in approving interaction that's hosted on a web server. And the reason we started there is because we had a web service, and we thought this would be quite a nice way to build it. And then we realized that there were significant spikes around shift changes such that we had to do tens of thousands of verifications in a matter of a very small number of minutes, many verifications per second. And although we could scale up our web server, and you can imagine building kind of a tiered approach where you might put web servers in individual sites and so forth, and maybe there's some kind of a giant database at corporate headquarters that all these web servers talk to, and maybe that database is distributed, and you scale that all up. It's a known recipe. As we studied this problem, we realized there was a drastic simplification that would be better. And that was, what if the cell phone in question that's proving something just proves it directly to the turnstile using NFC? All of a sudden, you have perfect horizontal scalability. And you also have more robustness, both in the face of network brownouts and, power outages and things like that, where you don't have a single point of failure in your architecture. And so that was the design that we ended up proposing. And the thing that's interesting about this is that Diagram A is something that you could comfortably do with an HTTP API. Diagram B would be a departure from a standard. If there were a standard that was only an HTTP standard, Diagram B would be a non-standard, non-interoperable approach that would get dissed as being, you know, unfair divergence or unreasonable proprietary thing. And I don't think it should be. I got to go a little bit faster. So second use case, my son got in an Uber, about a month ago, and, the driver and he were chatting. It was late at night. He was driving home and the Uber driver started telling him what he thought about, pandemics and how he didn't really think that there was a serious problem and it was all a big hoax. And, why did he need to, wear a mask? And it was an imposition on him as an Uber driver to have to wear a mask. And as he was talking, he actually pulled his mask off and he said, "And by the way, I'm COVID positive and now you're exposed, but don't worry about it because, don't worry about it because it's really not a serious illness anyway." And, so my son got exposed to COVID through this crazy driver. Now, what this highlights is the need for ordinary people to be verifiers, not institutions, ordinary people. My son would have loved to be able to say, "Prove to me," as he got in an Uber, "prove to me, Mr. Driver, that you are COVID negative." But that's not something that's possible today. If we build a web API, we could certainly allow proving, but it would have to go up to the cloud and come back down again. And in this particular case, my son was on a road around a mountain where he didn't have good internet connectivity. So I think having ordinary people prove things or verify things, excuse me, is really important. And another important variation on this is you have an institution that says, "Prove to me that you are COVID negative," for example. It would be great if a human being could turn around and say, "Great, I'll do that as soon as you prove to me that you're really the hospital and not a hacker who's pretending to be the hospital." So having reciprocal ability to be a verifier in the system, I think, is really important. And it doesn't fit quite as nicely with HTTP as an approach for framing the problem. A third case, I'm currently trying to move to Switzerland, and I'm in the process of getting a visa. And it's been interesting to think about the interaction patterns here. The folks that I interact with in Switzerland are asleep when I'm awake and awake when I'm asleep. So we're not able to interact in real time. And the interactions unfold over days or weeks, not over minutes. And I'd like to be able to conduct such interactions over email. Now you could say, well, this is a perfectly easy problem to solve with an HTTP API. And I kind of agree with you. If the Swiss government had an HTTP API for proving things, then proving that I'm a US citizen, that I have a work permit, that I have a clean criminal record, would be something that I could do, except that I'm not running a web server. And when, they want to tell me that there's a new status update, how are they going to do it? I don't have an endpoint where they can call, you know, my webhook. So, what are they going to do? They're going to send me an email. Well, that's very telling to me that they want to send me an email because that means that they're stepping outside the boundaries of HTTP to solve the problem. Last use case, offline payments. I became sensitized to this when I joined SICPA, and learned about digital cash. Digital cash became a really big deal for world governments when Facebook announced the Libra initiative, and a lot of world governments sat up in alarm and said, "Wait a minute, we're going to lose our national sovereignty over our money system if money is privatized." And so there are dozens, if not hundreds, of research projects going on right now, funded by major world governments about digital cash. This is not to be confused with cryptocurrency. This is like a digital dollar, a digital pound, a digital euro. And one of the requirements that surfaces over and over and over again in these discussions is you have to be able to do this offline. The reason why is because the whole reason they're doing digital cash is as a substitute for the online system that already solves most of the problems in a developed world with great internet connectivity. So you notice the headline there about the Bahamas. They have a currency called the sand dollar. And the whole reason they came up with it and prioritized it was because They wanted to be able to distribute disaster aid after hurricanes to citizens without Brinks trucks driving around and trying to ferry across islands. And so there's a fundamental requirement. You can't say in disaster recovery, well, everybody has to be online to do it. So what's interesting about this and how it connects to verification of credentials is we all talk about how we're going to use VCs to do KYC and AML. But if you can imagine us taking an HTTP API to these governments and saying, yeah, you can be offline to spend and receive money, but you can't be offline to prove that the parties in question have been KYC'd appropriately, we will get nowhere. So this is an example of a major government requirement that I think suggests that HTTP isn't the sweet spot way to describe it. Now, just to be clear, I'm not down on HTTP, and I think HTTP will solve 80% of the use cases that we care about right now quite nicely. What I'm suggesting, though, is that the problem of credential exchange needs to be described more generically than an HTTP API. And it needs to be standardized more generically than that so that all of these other use cases like NFC, Bluetooth, or high latency or offline are not marginalized. I'm worried that if we only standardize or start by standardizing the HTTP version of things, we're going to suck all the air and the funding out of the problem, and these other use cases will remain marginalized. And I think that would be bad for us. So I'm not advocating that we actually solve all of these problems right away. We don't have to implement something other than HTTP in the near term. What I'm advocating is that we describe the design space in a spec as being broader than HTTP. And then we describe something that's HTTP specific, having that general context in the background. This is one way to do it. You could describe the problem as a three-layer problem where the bottom problem is a sequence of payloads that have to be exchanged. And we could standardize the sequence of payloads in the abstract without talking about what the transport layer is and without talking about security. And that could be a problem unto itself that deserves its own spec. Then we could say, let's discuss how we achieve security when we're exchanging those. And there could be different ways to do that. And lastly, we could say, now that we know how to do it, the security, and we know what we're exchanging, let's put a facade on that standard that's appropriate for each transport we're working on. But the facade for HTTP then is not deep. It's very shallow, and it sits upon these other things that are already standardized rather than being its own solution unto itself. So what I drew here is three paths through this diagram. There's the red dots, the yellow dots, and the green dots. The red dots represent what I think I heard last week about the VC-HTTP API. There was an assumption that credential exchange should be described by a standard that contemplates not just HTTP-isms, but also payloads and other things about transport security and so forth. This is the thing that I felt the need to come and express my concern about. And then there's yellow dots and green dots, which represent two alternative paths that I could live with. One, the yellow one would be, we standardize only at the bottom level, and then we say, we're going to, take advantage of transport security to answer the security question. That makes HTTP more different from other transports because the security for each one is different. What I'd prefer to see is that the security is also standardized, and that would be the green dots through this. And I put W3C, IETF, and DIF there just as kind of examples of organizations that I think have a legitimate claim on a problem domain there and would be a good place to sit, standardize a solution. So thank you for listening so intently to me. I'm done now, and I hope I didn't go over 15 minutes.
Nope, that was great. Thank you, Daniel. On the queue, I'm on the queue, then Justin, then Marcus. And then if you've got any comments on what Daniel just said, please feel free to queue plus and put yourself on the queue. So thank you for this, Daniel. This was great. I think many of your concerns are valid, right? Meaning, I don't think any of us want to see HTTP as the center of the world and us, you know, design something purely around HTTP at the cost of, you know, that solution being a point solution for HTTP only. So I don't think the worst thing is going to happen. I think there have already been discussions around, can we make the messages and payloads agnostic? And really more specifically, could we get DIDCOM to work over this along with other mechanisms as well? And look at how all those things work holistically rather than, you know, just creating a stovepipe solution. So I expect that to be a topic of discussion and debate here. My hope is, Daniel, you can find, some time to provide your insight here and point out areas that you're concerned as the work progresses. My hope here is that at least your worst fears are certainly not anything that I've heard anyone push forward. That's it. Next up is Justin.
Yeah, first off, thanks for this presentation. And I want to start by saying that I completely understand where you're coming from. I understand very well the desire to have a fully abstracted system like this that can just be applied to a variety of different transports and stacks and delivery methods and security models and things like that. It's a very, very compelling story. It is, however, a story that I believe to be a complete fiction because this has been attempted many, many times over the course of computer history. Probably the most recent set of scars come from SOAP. SOAP was intended to be a transport agnostic protocol system that allowed you to have messages with like all sorts of different contents in it, and then the security was baked into SOAP, so when you were doing it over SMTP or over HTTP, it still kind of worked and everything was all nicely self-contained. The problem with this, and this is a very, very big problem, the problem with this is that you don't end up taking advantage of any of the native aspects of any part of the stack that you're deploying on, because you are you end up having to write your standard out to a sort of an assumed common abstraction layer. The second problem with this, which is even bigger, is that you inevitably end up abstracting from a single point, because building an abstraction layer on top of HTTP, you inevitably, without fail, are going to end up baking things into the abstraction, drawing lines in the abstraction that actually end up relying on HTTP or some quirk of the HTTP stack, whether that's, you know, IP delivery or TCP or whatever, you know. It always happens this way. I have yet to see a valid, well-accepted counterexample. And no, that is not me asking for boutique, counterpoints here. Regardless, I would caution this group very strongly against making this type of thing be so detached from HTTP as to attempt to be fully abstracted. All of that said, an approach that I have seen work many times is to take the concepts from a concrete system which does depend on a very specific set of security layers and transport layers and encodings and things like that, and make that translatable into different things. So you have something that is well defined and you need to put it somewhere else. Well, okay, we don't have TLS. We need something that acts like TLS for us or gives us the equivalent protections. So I would encourage this group to go rather in that direction than to try to come up a priori with a grand abstraction to rule them all.
Great. Thanks, Justin. Marcus, you're up next, and then Mike.
Yes, Daniel, thanks for the presentation. As you probably know, regarding the VCHTTP API, there's currently an ongoing discussion whether those APIs are meant for purely internal use, meaning, for example, an issuer connecting their existing IT infrastructure with a new verifiable credential issuing component, or if those VCHTTP APIs are also for communication between holders, issuers, and verifiers. There are some recent efforts to add APIs for holders, which have somehow accelerated this discussion. And this aspect was also mentioned in that issue 50, which you mentioned in the beginning in the VCHTTP API. So could you add your perspective on that, and if your concerns are apply only to the case where holders communicate with issues and with verifiers, or if you're also proposing your approach for a purely internal communication within an issuer's infrastructure, for example?
I don't think that we need to abstract inside an infrastructure, and the reason why is because HTTP is beautiful for internal communication inside of an IT managed infrastructure. If somebody wants to do something that isn't HTTP inside an internal infrastructure, they certainly could, but the pressure to standardize there is not as great. There is some value in standardizing there so that you could swap out different vendors, which I think is why we tried to standardize the internal version of this to begin with. But the use cases that I cited don't really come up when all you're talking about is one microservice inside Acme Corp needs to call another microservice inside Acme Corp. I would never argue that you need to abstract so that those things can happen over Bluetooth. But I'm really worried about giving away the independence and sovereignty of individuals for the convenience of institutions, which I think is what we're doing if we privilege HTTP too strongly in our thinking.
So just a quick comment, Daniel. If you're going to respond, please go ahead and put yourself on the queue. That's fine. You're responding, so that's fine. Noting the time, we're going to have to move pretty quickly through the queue. So, Mike, Dimitri, Dave, please try to make your points brief. Daniel, if you'd like the last word on that, feel free to add yourself, but I'm going to freeze the queue after that. Mike, you're up.
Yeah, since I'm always brief, I'll go quick. I think these were very valid points brought up. There is also an internal use case to be aware of in terms of thinking about focusing on the data structures, more so, and the abstraction layers more so than the actual protocol, which is high volume internal transactions with things like gRPC. And it's just something we encounter a lot with some of the data we move around. So.
Great. Thanks, Mike. Dimitri?
I just want to say a big plus one to what Daniel was saying. I think I agree with all of those points. And I do think that I also agree with the points Justin brought up, that going too far overboard with an abstract approach has not been successful in the past. But I want to highlight that I don't think that's what Daniel is proposing. I think he's proposing just, we understand that HTTP API is probably going to be the first implementation, but let's make sure we don't cut off the routes towards Bluetooth and NFC and QR code based and all those things. So I think what's being proposed here is more a design stance rather than no HTTP. That's it.
Thanks, Dimitri. Dave?
Right. I agree with taking sort of a design stance that there's more to the world than HTTP. But I think it's clear we all agree that there are both HTTP and non-HTTP use cases. But just because there are both of those cases, it does not mean that there's no cost to designing a protocol that works in both cases. And both cases is fairly broad. There's lots of different protocols out there. Justin spoke very well to this. We can't necessarily separate concerns as cleanly as we would like. And another way of putting that is there's a significant danger that we'll end up fighting a constant uphill battle against existing HTTP infrastructure and scaling tools if we deviate too far from an idiomatic HTTP API design. So what I heard in this presentation is that there's a fear that perhaps these non-HTTP use cases aren't important enough on their own to address, because they'll only be addressed if they can piggyback off of work that's being done elsewhere to solve the use cases that people actually want to fund or work on. I would say it may be hard to hear, but if that fear is realized, then I think it's an indication that these other use cases are just not important enough to enough people. But I would put it like this. We should be careful not to borrow trouble from the future. If we think these use cases are important, then they will eventually be addressed.
Great. Thanks, Dave. Ted, real quick, and then Daniel, you with the last word before we move on to proposals.
I will try to be quick. First off, it has always been this way. Every time we do this, it goes the same way. It is a pretty feeble argument for most things. Just in the world of random stuff, OpenLink has achieved a number of things that nobody believed was possible, including implementing an RDS store in a SQL database, including engineering logouts, account changes within a web browser and a connection to a server. These are things, it's impossible. Well, we do it. I don't believe it. Well, we do it. It's still impossible. It's not an argument.
Thanks, Ted.
No, sorry. Not it. The other piece is, the generic design does not necessarily need to be an overarching one abstraction to rule them all. But the generic design should be something basically that says, well, we need to take a thing from here and get it to there, and we need to be able to request it, and we need to be able to shape it. And these kind of generic words, I haven't said anything that goes to HTTP yet, but it's all stuff that needs to be implementable in HTTP and other protocols. The first one being HTTP is fine. It's problematic to blanketly label it as HTTP because that will make it so that we don't do the work that's necessary to make it be easy to do some of the other stuff, or easier. Nothing's going to be easy in this. That's it.
Great. Thanks, Ted. Daniel, go ahead.
I'm not arguing in favor of what I would call a move like the abstract data model that we did in DID work. I think the abstractions I'm arguing for two abstractions. First of all, I think security should be a separate problem from the transport. Not that you couldn't get security from the transport, but we better not write a spec where that's the only way you can get security. And secondly, I think that payloads needs to be a separate problem. That's not massive, ridiculous amounts of abstraction. And I'm trying to argue for an abstraction that's justified by use cases that all of the examples I gave are concrete, and they all exist today. I'm not talking about use cases that are theoretical in the future. Now, to Dave's point about whether or not you know, these will all be justified by themselves. Self-sovereign identity is supposed to help people who, you know, are currently disenfranchised. That's one of its goals. And we can't address that goal by saying, well, let's take all the people who are currently enfranchised and solve all of their problems, and to hell with everybody else. And then they'll eventually solve their problems if they can come up with enough money for it. So I feel very frustrated about the assertion that we can solve the problems with all the money behind them and not the other ones, and we'll just solve the other ones later if somebody cries enough.
All right. Thank you, Daniel. Okay, so we're gonna move on to some of the proposals. Daniel, again, thank you very much for the presentation, and thanks all to that lively discussion. And Chris Kelly, you are absolutely crushing it, on your first time scribing. So great job. Keep going. We are going to, flip into, proposals, next. Before we do this, Juan, would you like to provide just a really quick update on just some of the stuff that's been happening in use case land?
Sure. The use case Google Doc that I posted, I think, on an issue of the wrong repo last week, I posted on this repo now, and various volunteers, two volunteers from Legendary Requirements who are way more experienced than me at gathering use cases, have stepped forward to help gathering, editing, debating, structuring the use case conversation. The Google Doc linked in that issue is getting a lot of comments. Whenever this group wants to move that to the repo, to GitHub-based, Markdown-based rather than Google Doc, I'm happy to do it. But I think we should wait on the editors to figure out if they want to appoint people to just the use cases, or I didn't know if that decision had to come before or after the conversation about sub editors or three APIs or what, it's hard for me to tell the order of operations of the decisions, but we're all standing by to help, in whatever venue the editors of the spec think most helpful.
Great. Thanks. Thanks, Juan. Yeah. And my expectation here, I put myself on the queue to speak to that a bit. My expectation is a decent bit of that may happen in parallel. In fact, we're going to try to do it, parallel. We don't want to stop people from putting their use cases in a place and recording them. The job of the editors, whoever they may be in the future, is going to be sorting through all of that stuff and organizing it and that sort of thing. So I don't see any need, unless there are objections, to slow down on gathering use cases. The other point I wanted to mention here, and I'm going to just share my screen really quickly. Oh, sorry, one second. There's a use case, kind of contribution framework here at the top of the document. And I think that's good enough for now. Thank you, Ted, for, filling this out. It's a fairly good way to contribute a use case. So use case title, author, your email, if you're okay with sharing that, you don't need to. And then a description of the use case. I also took that and created a new issue template. That's a use case proposal. So you can go to issues, do a get started on a use case, and it will give you kind of the fields that you want to fill out. Again, this is just kind of saying, maybe we want to collect use cases like this as well, because this would allow us to have kind of a threaded conversation on it. I do think we should do one or the other. Both may be a bit too chaotic and difficult. This is me just kind of putting it out there for people to kind of contemplate before the next call. The other thought I had was we probably need a separate repository for use cases. So this is probably in the wrong place. I'd be interested in, if folks, wanted to hear if folks wanted to have a separate, use cases, repository so we can keep a clean distinction between the various work items. That's it. Who is on the queue? Heather, you're up, and then Justin.
Great. Are you able to hear me okay?
Yes, can hear you.
Awesome. So this looks great. Benu, I love the use case template. My only concern is who is going to be providing these use cases? folks who use GitHub a lot have a lot of comfort and ability to use GitHub for things that I think are stretches, like writing and documentation. Folks who are not comfortable using GitHub really much at all find this to be a barrier to participation. One of the things I liked that I saw that Kim and the team and VCEDU team is they had a Google form. I'm not saying you should have a Google form, but that is very user friendly. So, I think adding it in the Google Doc, everyone's pretty much comfortable with that. My concern is just that, however you guys accept and collect the use cases, that it has a low barrier to entry, especially for involving new folks, for the use cases.
Justin, you're up.
I just wanted to note, having collected use cases for a number of different groups and processes, I want people to keep in mind that use cases are best used to guide kind of the beginning of the work. And unless this group is trying to formalize their output, in my experience, a more of an expression tool like a wiki or something of that nature tends to be better at collecting these. Because, again, unless you're collating them into a document itself, use cases are really best as, you know, write once and then refer back to from time to time to make sure you're going in the right direction and people are using the same terms, as opposed to an issue tracker.
Got it. Thanks, Justin. All right. So I'm happy to suggest that the group does not use GitHub. Heather, I think those are valid. You made valid points. The Google Doc seems to be working fairly well at collecting things. Justin's saying he doesn't find Google Docs friendly. I'm wondering if we could just agree that we're just going to use the use case template and Google Docs to collect use cases. And then if folks would object to that, what alternate mechanism, like send an email to the mailing list, would that address your concern? So just real quick, there's a suggested proposal that is use the use case template in Juan's Google Doc and Google Docs to collect use cases. Would anyone object to that if we put that forward as a proposal? Okay, I'm going to put that forward since no one objected. Plus one if you agree to that, minus one if you disagree. If you're going to minus one it, please let us know how you would like it changed so that your minus one turns into a plus one. All right. I'm seeing a lot of plus ones, no minus ones. I'm going to say that's resolved. Going once, going twice. All right. That'll be the input mechanism that we have. And clearly, if someone emails something to the mailing list, we're not going to say no, right? I mean, someone will copy it into the document. Okay. The other thing that we've got about 7 minutes left. The other thing that we almost got agreement on last week was doing our work, meaning the VC HTTP API, in one respec specification. and then breaking the OS files into modular components. I believe Adrian was the only one that objected. I know, Daniel, you had concerns that I think we may have heard about today. Adrian, are you on the call today? No, so that makes it difficult to bring this up again. So we'll defer that. We have a couple of other proposals. One, you had noted a preference on ones that you'd want to run. Of the ones that were sent out, which ones would you want to try and pick up here?
Sorry, do you mean of the six proposals or of the three? Oh, I see what you mean. I think the 3-1 issue to me is tied up in whether or not they have some sort of delegated accountability. Like, is someone going to sort of take lead on each one? Like, whether they're separate documents or not matters, I think, is a question I don't even understand the stakes of. But I think I have noted so far in talking about the use cases and in previous conversations that a lot of people have a lot of opinions about the holder thing, and I feel like that's a big work item that should be parallelized from the others. So I guess my question is, the propositions that interested me most were, if it's three separate files, does each one have a separate sort of accountable person? and which isn't exactly, I'm sort of mingling two proposals, I think. Maybe unhelpfully, sorry, I'm a little scattered today.
That's fine. So let me speak to that. Last time we did kind of discuss this, and the three different specifications did not seem to resonate. We could request, we could ask people to do the, provide input this time. The one with where we combine everything into a single specification seemed to resonate the most. What we could do there, Respec has a mechanism where we can create three separate files, one for issuing, one for verification, one for presentations or holder APIs or whatever you want. So we can split the spec up into multiple different pieces, and we as a group can decide that each one of those pieces gets a different editor. And we can pull them all into the same specification. So we have the power to structure that in any way. The main question was, do people want to see one specification with everything in it so that there's just one place to look, or jump across three? Given the time, I'm going to just run a poll to see if anyone would like to do the three different specifications. Let's see, create three. All right, so let me put this proposal in here. And this is just the plus one, minus one. We are not going to resolve it today. It's merely a poll. So here's the poll for, like, no, I want to see three different specifications, one for issuing, one for verification, one for presentation. I want them split up. Dimitri voting twice there. Like it. Oh, it's minus one. You plus one, minus one. So you're still a minus one. All right. It looks like a lot of people are not looking forward to that. David's in favor. Okay, so I mean, from this, we ran the other poll last week. From this, it's fairly clear that three different specs is probably not going to fly, no matter how many times we reword that. It looks like we're probably converging on one specification, with potentially multiple different editors for each part of that specification. So if Adrian's here, next week. If some of you can chat with Adrian, he was the only minus one on the other proposal between now and next week, please do so. If not, hopefully he's on the call next week. If he's not on the call next week, we're going to run the proposal anyway on how many different specs we're talking about. And then we can get into the structure. Marcus, I'm sorry. You were on the queue. Do you want to, share what you were going to say?
Wasn't very important. I just wanted to mention that if there is support for splitting up the OpenAPI specifications into multiple files for issuer, verifier, and holder, and there is a draft PR open for that, I just want to point out that they are likely then also shared components between those that would be used, for example, by the issuer and the verifier part. I'm not sure if that would also be true for the different parts of the specification. Just wanted to mention that there will be some content that cannot be uniquely associated with just issue and verifier. I'm not sure what that then means for editors or governance of the process. Just wanted to mention that.
Great. Thank you, Marcus. And I do think that there was quite a bit of support for splitting the open API specifications last time as well. So it looks like we're gravitating towards splitting the different parts of the specification into different files and collecting them together in the respec document and splitting the OAS files and doing whatever magic there is there to put them all together as well. All right, that's the call today. Thank you, everyone, for joining. Next week, we are going to make the call on how many different specifications we're going to have and the structure of those. It would also be really nice to maybe start talking about some use cases in new APIs that people would want to see in the specification. So specifically, this is about the traceability API folks and holder APIs and that sort of thing. It would be really good to have a set of use cases that we could structure that conversation around. Okay. With that, thanks all very much.
Quick question. I'm sorry. Quick question. Daniel Ardman, are you still on the line? Did you send the slides? Yes. That was already in a previous email, right?
The okay. slides are on the mailing list.
Okay. Okay, cool. Yeah, because I just wanted to look at them again. If they're already on the mailing list, all good.
Yep. All right. Thanks, all. Have a good one. Bye.
Thanks, everybody.